So my name is Cesar Escobar. Me and Parker Hinson are going to co-present to you guys the first part of a bigger study that we are conducting at the University of Florida. Go Gators! And we have no relationships to disclose at this time. So our project was selected at the College of Public Health at the University of Florida last year among a number of competing projects that are meant to foster collaboration among doctoral students, graduate students really, across departments in the college. So we come from three different departments: Health Services Research, myself, Parker from Community Health and Behavioral Science, and our other co-investigator, Jessica, who's not here today. She is at Clinical and Health Psychology. So we proposed this project, and we got a little bit of funding to conduct it over 2 years. So basically, just as a little bit of background, and after a literature review, we found that disparity of access to specialty mental health care and treatment for children and adolescents is more likely to happen in the United States compared to other developed countries. Like, for example, youth in the U.S. are less likely to seek mental health care by themselves. Usually they enter to mental health care either through schools or juvenile justice, social services, and others. And also research has found that problems with access to mental health services for children and adolescents appear to be important in rural areas, and untreated mental health disorders in these areas can lead to a number of issues like school failure, family conflicts, and even more risky situations like drug abuse, violence, and even suicide. Thinking about lack of access, research has been looking that mobile cell phones, smartphones lately, might be able to help. And studies from last year estimated that young adults and adolescents in the United States have over 90% and almost 80% of smartphone or cell phone ownership, respectively, and over 60 and almost 40% of smartphone ownership. And over one third of smartphone users download between 1 and 8 mobile apps each month. This number is only for adults, though. I mean, there's reasons to believe that maybe for adolescents that proportion might be even more. One thing about mobile applications for public health is that so far there is still limited availability of rigorous evaluation methods and quite scarce evidence about effectiveness. Not so much about efficacy, but yes, about effectiveness. But despite that, the number of apps available in the marketplace, with either health, fitness, or even medical purposes, is staggering. It's like over 90,000 apps at the start of this year. Given its pervasiveness, mobile devices in the last few years have been proposed to be used for a number of chronic conditions like diabetes, high blood pressure, and of course mental health. And in the area of depression, in the area of mental health, adolescent mental health, I'm sorry, we have only one, so far, we have only one randomized controlled trial that has been conducted a couple years ago in Australia, and its results were published. There were a number of clinical trials, but this is the only randomized controlled trial that have shown efficacy in depression management among adolescents in rural and urban Australia. So with this background in mind, our project is proposed to assess community attitudes toward the adoption of mobile devices, specifically smartphones, for mental health monitoring and management as groundwork for developing actually a mobile application. So we are conducting a three-phase needs assessment in Alachua County, where the University of Florida is located. Alachua County is a urban and rural, mostly rural county in north central Florida. And our needs assessment has three phases. Phase one was a round of focus groups and individual interviews, focus group with the community and individual interviews with primary care physicians. Phase two, which is being conducted now, is a survey across the county. And phase three will be actually developing a mobile app prototype and a second round of focus group and interviews as well to provide feedback about the prototype. We're here today to present the results from phase one to you. So this is the flowchart, the population for all three phases. We are focusing on phase one, and let me tell you that the target populations for phase one were young adults, 18 to 24 years of age, caregivers of adolescents, we didn't include adolescents specifically, although we are very interested in this population. For phase one, we plan to do so for the survey and the prototype development later on. And primary care physicians who practice in Alachua County. Our inclusion criteria were for young adults, for everybody actually, that they had to be a current resident in Alachua County, for young adults being between 18 to 24 years of age, for caregivers identify themselves as a caregiver of an adolescent between the ages of 12 to 17, and for primary care physicians are being a pediatrician or family general practitioner, and treat either adolescents or young adults. Our recruitment methods included flyers that we posted in the community, as well as physician offices. We actually send out invitation letters to primary care physicians for them to participate in the individual interviews. And a quite unique recruitment method we used was partnering with Health Street. Health Street is a University of Florida program. It's a community-based effort that the university is conducting to try to reduce disparities in healthcare and research by linking the medically underserved population to medical and social services, as well as opportunities to participate in research. So those were basically our recruitment methods, and Parker is going to present the results for this qualitative assessment.
Good afternoon. So as Cesar kind of mentioned earlier, we have examined the caregivers, young adults, and primary care physicians in Alachua County for this study. We chose caregivers just as we're all very familiar with the issues with IRB and minority and populations of that sense. So that was the reason why we went with caregivers of adolescents 12 to 17, just to kind of bypass that. But then in the second phase, we actually do have a special, unique survey that we adapted from our young adult survey. So the questions are a lot more clear, a lot easier. We've got pictures with like smiley faces and things like that on it for Likert scale kind of responses. But I'm just going to go through and share with you some of the more important quotes that we've transcribed from these interviews and focus groups, and then kind of give you a general summary of the differences and similarities and what we found. So what we used was a qualitative method called a thematic analysis. It's the most common form of analysis in qualitative research compared to other forms of kind of like ground-up kind of approaches. It emphasizes pinpointing, examining, and recording different patterns within the data. So we, as our interviews and focus groups, we did kind of have, they were open-ended questions, but we did have a set of questions. We didn't just walk in and ask, oh, what do you think about mobile applications for mental health? So in a sense, these themes emerged from the initial questions that we asked. So these patterns that arise across the data sets are really important to the description of these phenomena and help us kind of answer our own specific research questions for analysis. So these are kind of the steps. These are like the six steps of, there's five there, but the six is just reporting your findings. So of an actual thematic analysis, so familiarization with the data. I can't tell you how many hours that I've spent and some of our RAs have spent transcribing and reading through these. But again, very important in qualitative research is to first read through before actually kind of going back and biasing yourself in a sense. So then there's this generation of initial codes that we find, anything from maybe security issues to features that they might want to see in an app. These kind of like come out as codes. And then a lot of codes are combined together to create overarching themes within them. So then we review those, define those further, and then report our findings from there. So I'll just go through the different cohorts that we looked at, first with the caregivers of different adolescents. So these were the major caregiver themes that emerged. We see that they were concerned about mobile health management, just the current practice of management. Mental health, sorry, I said mobile. The second theme was the actual usefulness of a mobile application to manage and monitor their mental health. The independence of their child, so kind of autonomy. Mental health is very important. It's a very private kind of issue. So it was pretty interesting to note that a lot of the parents and caregivers were very open to having their children use the app independently. There were a few that, you know, definitely wanted to maybe at least receive a report every week or two, you know, or be in touch some way. But as far as they were very open to the idea of having their child just use the app as long as they felt that they trusted it. Another theme was the desire for more effective mobile applications. Kind of Cesar pointed to earlier, there's in the app stores themselves, there's not a lot of evidence-based applications in health, specifically in mental health. So this desire for more effective, and then of course some security features. So I'm not going to read through all the quotes. I'd be happy to share these with you, but kind of just wanted to point out some of the more important themes that emerged. So within how this is set up, so within each overarching theme up here, these are the codes that emerged, and then I just have a couple examples of the quotes, and I'll get this mouse off. So one of the first codes that we noticed were like the shortcoming of the medical system. So they want a more face-to-face interaction. It's not necessarily maybe how their children communicate best face-to-face doctors, so having a mobile application would really enhance their ability to have more consistent care. Another code that emerged was mental health is not currently sufficiently addressed. So, for example, when I take my child to the primary care physician, mental health is rarely addressed. From that perspective, I don't feel like the PCP really focuses on mental health. So unless the parent has insight or knowledge about mental health, they might not know to inquire more deeply about it. Looking at the usefulness of the mobile applications, I don't have any quotes, but these are the codes that emerged. So there seemed, you know, making sure that the application had low cost to no cost. There was a direct access to care. So maybe there's a way that they could communicate with not only the clinic, but the physician, kind of in some way, having some direct communication. The ability to self-monitor, maybe involving or incorporating already validated measures, maybe like the Beck Depression Scale, something like that. An outlet aside from the parents. So again, maybe the child just doesn't feel comfortable enough talking about all the issues with their parents, so having an additional outlet for that. Simplicity of the app, having mobile alerts and notifications that might pop up. Later on, we'll get to it as well, but a lot of these kind of stemmed around maybe an alert to, or like a reminder for medication, to take medication, or an alert that, oh, you know, just something popping up, oh, how do you feel today? You know, is everything going okay, kind of thing. And then the ability to track these signs and symptoms were both important to the caregivers and the physicians as to kind of identify trends later on in the data. The independence of the child was the unique kind of theme that emerged within the caregivers compared to the other cohorts that we looked at. So this respect for privacy. So this quote, so there are certain things I'll prefer him not to do or download, but I don't limit his use at all. We have a very open dialogue, so he discusses everything with us. So I don't feel like I need to go behind his back or monitor him or anything else. I feel very fortunate that we've been able to establish that kind of relationship with our kids. This was kind of consistent with a number of the caregivers, which I didn't mention earlier. There are 10, I believe. My page is down there, but anyway. There's 10 caregivers, and then 12 young adults and 4 physicians that are kind of making up this qualitative work. Apologize for not mentioning that earlier. And then the other code was enabling the child to kind of seek assistance independently. So giving them that freedom to explore and look at things on their own. And then the lower quote at the bottom. So personally, I would want either myself or another trusted adult to have contact with them. So let the child choose another adult that they trust and have a mental health agreement with that trusted adult. So if it's not me, my feelings aren't going to be hurt. It's more important to me that my kids have someone that they trust that they could communicate when they feel like they need help. Alright, and so the fourth theme that emerged within the caregivers was this desire for more effective mobile applications. Again, kind of this idea of increased accessibility with the doctor or the clinic or some type of resource if they need it, and being interactive, not just being this storage place for information, but somehow interactive, kind of like I mentioned earlier, maybe with the notifications. Maybe they knew your mood and asked other things that contributed to mental health. So maybe this could become the new mood ring or something, you know, that people have. But at the same time, it would be private, you know, in a sense. So this is a continuation of that theme. So more connection and interaction to the physician. So if there's a way to have more real-time interaction with the healthcare provider, I think that would be great. And as I'll show you later, the physicians actually felt in the same way. They were very open to the idea of being more connected, even though a lot of the times the physicians are kind of strapped for time in the first place. And then just some other features that they were interested in having, what to do if they experience symptoms, and maybe there's a clinic in the close proximity that they could call, or having a list of contacts with a physician that they could get in touch with. Again, reminders to take medications, self-monitoring diary to record moods and symptoms. And then security features, definitely prevalent within every single one of these cohorts, was the need and the importance of security. So I would want the opportunity to view what he or this lady's son felt was comfortable having them, but it was important to have privacy setting that would ensure that the information wasn't shared. You know, to them, security was a big deal because it's patient health information, it's PHI. Right. For the young adults, the themes that emerged were similar to the caregivers, these concerns about just mental health management, current mental health management, the desire for more informative applications, security features. But then the unique theme that emerged within them was this legitimacy of future applications. So a need for evidence-based applications. They don't want to just download anything from the app stores. They want to have some trusted kind of backing, institutional backing. So some of the concerns about the mental health were these barriers to care. They might not have any issues right now, but again, cost to them was important. It's hard to find resources on their own, so having someone help you or having an application to help you find and point you to those resources would be great. Offense if the physician proposed mental health application. So I would find offense to that and would say, do you think that there is something wrong with me? Which is really interesting. Another young adult mentioned, you know, I think I would like to be approached by a high school counselor more than a primary care physician. That really stuck out to me because what that's indicating is that young adults don't feel comfortable enough to be approached by doctors with an application like this, and that there may be another avenue that we need to explore as far as kind of at least suggesting the application to them so they don't feel, the idea was that they felt that it was very inappropriate if a doctor were to ask them to use this mobile application. Not everybody, but it was just a unique kind of results that emerged because, you know, we feel, you know, here we are going to try to promote this, but the best way would be in the clinics, and it would be a great avenue to start talking about mental health, as that's clearly an issue as well, because mental health here is just like not sufficiently addressed. So when they see their doctor and they say that only their physical health is checked, you know, they don't have anything to manage mental health, and I don't think my doctor has ever asked me about mental health. Like, those are really powerful kind of statements, I think, that we need to look at further. Yeah. And apologies for is the fourth presenter here? Okay, just making sure. I'm going through this, so just in the interest of time, I can speed it up. But if the fourth one's here, then.
I just heard from Michelle.
Okay. Not a problem. Well, hope she feels better. So the second theme that emerged was this, again, a desire for more informative mobile applications, more frequent tracking and feedback for moods, these kind of thought diaries, mood diaries. Aesthetic opponents, really the young adults were the only ones to truly kind of like talk about the aesthetics of the application, how different screens could look, simplicity, having it colorful or having the option to have different colors to kind of like set, not just have one standard option, but be able to really kind of customize the application to their own personal need. Brevity, so just an option to maybe save and continue later or save and submit if they're filling out like these predefined measures or if they're going through just like a little monthly questionnaire in case something comes up. I don't know about y'all, but my cell phone dies all the time. It's frustrating. There's apparently some portable chargers in the expo that I've been looking for this entire time. If anybody knows where those are, please let me know because I need to grab one of those. But kind of just coming back to this, you know, it would be important for something like that if they are kind of going through and you're almost at the end to be able to save and move forward later. And then there's just this idea of personalization and other user control. Easier access to primary care physician. And then other features, reminders for medication, again, self-monitoring, and increased communication. Security features, again, privacy and security. So they wouldn't like an app that invades their privacy by tracking too many things. I just learned today that every time we take a picture, the coordinates of that picture are kept as metadata on the picture itself if you've got GPS enabled. That's scary. So making sure that that we abide by like these HIPAA kind of standards and that there is the quote at the bottom, I would feel more comfortable if the app required a password or a PIN to access it. Very important kind of a point. And then the unique theme that emerged from them was this need to be professionally tested and to be evidence-based. So have psychologists or psychiatrists who are experienced with mental health develop it. Got Cesar over here. Have it backed by an institution or something people know that's real and trusted. I think I would use it if it was a legitimate, trustworthy health app. I think it's more important for the health professional to do a real diagnosis first and not just put all of the responsibility onto the app. So that's kind of interesting as well. Right. And as far as physicians, the four themes that emerged, again, were current barriers in the mental health management, actual usefulness of mobile applications, but uniquely the limitations of mental health applications, and again, privacy and security. So looking at current barriers, the physicians referred to these more as like efficiency, but again, access as well. So with PCPs, oftentimes there's just not enough time in the day to manage everybody appropriately. So a lot of the times they say, I feel a little less comfortable doing things over the phone versus being able to do things in person. But then being able to increase that access was important as well. So if there's more access and more availability, I would definitely use the app just because I feel like technology is taking over, especially in medicine. It's huge right now. Again, tracking and thought records, these ideas of tracking mood, getting a qualitative information in addition to just the quantitative responses to these surveys that might be built into the app. And then therapeutic effects. So I thought that was really interesting as well. So I think using an application for relaxation techniques for people who have anxiety would be really helpful. So having something like that. And maybe the app could kind of identify if you're becoming more and more anxious over a certain amount of time and then recommend certain relaxation techniques to you. Uniquely, the physicians, like want the reports. We want to know what's like going on with the population. So said if I see a patient every 4 weeks, I can get a report in between visits just to see how they're doing. That would be great. Other features included, again, self-monitoring from the individual and then the summary of the monitoring for the physician, medication reminders, assistance in communicating symptoms, patient access, and features to guide patients in emergency. This was kind of in reference to maybe suicidal ideation thoughts. So what would happen if the app could actually recognize somebody who's becoming more suicidal and be able to recommend a proper resource, a local resource, or pop up with a suicide hotline, kind of just have that kind of information available. Uniquely, the limitations in mental health applications were for the physician. So I said, I have to do a lot of them billing on my lunch break or after the clinic finishes, because if I'm not reimbursed for doing it during working hours, they're not going to give me time just to do that. So what ends up happening is that you'll do all these things. It's important for patient care, but you want to keep it to a minimum. Mobile apps are unfortunately going to fall into the same category. Until you get to a point where it's part of the reimbursement model, no one is going to give you an hour a day during your clinic to just use the app when you have patients, even if it can improve patient outcomes. It has to be built into the billing model. So I think that's a really powerful statement as well. And then again, similar to all the other populations that we looked at, were this idea of privacy. So I think privacy is number one, especially in psychiatry and psychology, where this mental health is discussed. So making sure that it's confidential and private and secure, very, very important. So this is just a summary of our findings. Kind of combining the themes and looking at them further, we see that it's consistent across that there's these concerns about mental health management, the usefulness of a mobile application to manage mental health is needed, mobile application features, expectations with minors were just for the caregivers. The need for more informative mobile applications really came from both the young adults and the physicians. Limitations, specifically the billing kind of limitations, were physicians. And then the legitimacy of the application being evidence-based was kind of found throughout both the physician and young adults. And then, of course, the security and privacy between everyone. So as far as future directions, as I mentioned, this is phase one of a multi-phase project. We've developed the surveys already. It's just a matter of IRB approval and kind of moving forward with that, which was a hassle in itself. It took 6 months for IRB approval for this study. So, we're not asking about mental health, but it was difficult to even just ask about mental health concerns. Just wanting to talk to people about mental health concerns raised red flags immediately. And then the third phase would be the development of an actual prototype application to test, kind of again in a focus group interview type setting. So thank you very much. I'll take any questions, or again, in the interest of time, we can have the other presenter go, and I'd be happy to stay after and kind of help questions. But if there's anything I can answer like right away. Yes. Yes, the latter. That was one of the biggest problems with the IRB, is that we could not enroll anybody that had a mental health diagnosis already. So we had to enroll people based off the assumption that, or they came in just wanting to talk about mental health concerns. They might have just had mental health concerns in general. Also through the Health Street that we use, a lot of that we just kind of reached out to young adults who were interested in participating in a research project. So as long as they met our inclusion criteria of living in Alachua and having a primary care physician, then they could enroll in the focus group. Go back here and then over here. Sure, absolutely. At least from the four physicians that we've spoken to, a lot of them were very open to the idea of using it. But as we saw, too, the time to actually do this and everything else that everybody's doing throughout the day is very limited. So, I think that would have to definitely be a feature, that somebody could download the application and just use it on their own for self-monitoring. So that would be kind of the basis of the app, but maybe they could print out results or findings and at least just take it to the physician themselves. You know, if they didn't want that communication or dealing with security issues, you know, if it's not even feasible to kind of have this communication between physician and patient, at least the ability to print something out and kind of show what's happening. Because, I mean, it's if you're self-aware about issues that are happening to you, I mean, that's kind of powerful and gives you something to talk to the physician about if the physician isn't approaching you about mental health in the first place.
So, do you see it as maybe a monitoring tool, or also as would you incorporate
CBT
into your tool as well?
So cognitive behavioral therapy was definitely mentioned by a number of the physicians as being a great feature. Or at least giving them, you know, the relaxation and techniques and things. But yeah, please, you, yeah.
Actually, I mean, some of the features that people were interested included not only techniques like CBT, but also medication monitoring, the ability to communicate. Not exactly with the physician, but at least with someone at the office.
Just to schedule an appointment, or you know,
nurse,
or something like
maybe,
that. So.
Another kind of health professional, and the ability to maybe track their own symptoms in case they had one. It was surprising to see that. People were open to an app that could do a lot of things besides just providing some sort of relaxation technique. So it's kind of, there's a lot of expectations that people have of such an app like this.
Let me get it back.
Treatment, monitoring, and assistance.
Absolutely.
Let me get that. Something like that. You know, I think you have to kind of
that's a very good observation. I mean, the reason as far as the professionals, the health professionals we included, since the literature actually, I mean, we are talking, our first driver here is lack of access, and in rural areas and even in urban areas, adolescents, according to the literature, get most of their mental health services through primary care physicians because those are the ones that are available at rural areas. So that's why we thought for this to include this population of health professionals. And we want to be able to improve, if you will, management of mental health at primary care settings. And that's the reason, I mean, we thought it was important to work with this population.
So maybe and
right.
And the other thing that is that we didn't start the project with an idea of
the
okay, we need one app, two apps, three apps. We really wanted to, and we still want to understand what people want. And then when we get to the development phase, well, this might end up being three separate apps, or maybe one. We still have a road, a pathway to walk to make that discovery. But yes, you're.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes.
That's a question we are hoping our population, our participants, will help us to answer. Apparently, as you saw, people is kind of expecting something as with a lot of brevity, but at the end, at the same time, with a big umbrella that they can do a lot of things at the same time. And whether that will be feasible in terms of technical specifications of the app, that's something we have to see after in the development phase. And in order to build on these findings is that we are conducting the survey. For the survey, we are asking, we use these findings to actually build the survey and try to get more data, more information exactly on what kind of features people, most people really want to. Do they want to be able to only self-manage? Do they want to be able to track symptoms or self-diagnose kind of thing? That's the kind of information that we want to gather through the survey.
But it definitely wasn't just depression based. It was, you know, kind of like the big hitters were depression, anxiety, stress, were kind of like the top three. But being able to maybe have like, oh, what are you interested in? Click, and then you have those options for that type of like management. But then, and what was your question again? I'm sorry.
So, what about your choice?
Yeah, the web.
Web-based.
Correct. So we actually wrote that kind of language in as both identifying if a mobile app or web-based application would be used. However, a lot of people don't know the difference between a web-based and mobile application. When you just ask them up front, you actually have to explain the difference. I would say probably the web-based would be nice because it would be, you wouldn't have to develop it for two. Both the Apple and Android kind of devices, you would just access it. However, we've moved more towards the app because we asked people about this, and the ability to kind of store information to use later and to, you know, like, would be more accessible in an app. And also the biggest thing was that they could use it while offline. So the web-based application would have to require an internet connection to be able to use it, versus an app, it could have features that were available offline.
I think we should.
Yeah, I would love to, yeah. Do you have just a quick question? Or is?
Yeah, I just had a similar question.
Sure.
I guess also, what you're describing almost with the interaction with the information reporting to physicians, probably reporting to the parent, it all sounds more like an extension of a patient.
Right.
Instead of sort of recreating the wheel with an app, so have you thought, or given any thought to trying to consolidate resources and maybe customizing a portal, or I know you might have particularly
right.
But it sort of centralizing resources instead of spreading them out more in the app.
Yeah, that would be great. I mean, again, kind of just coming back to simplicity would be fantastic. But and then, you know, there's not just one EMR that we're working with, so then you kind of run into the issue of how do you kind of connect it to like all these different EMRs versus it just being its own standalone kind of portal in a sense. So and just tied back to the University of Florida itself and not like all